Okay, night number 5 in the Stanley Cup playoffs already in the books, and night number 1 of the North Division section of the playoffs now in the books. It's the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. Justin Cuthbert with you. The Winnipeg Jets, behind birthday boy Connor Hellebuyck, snatched a 4-1 victory from the Edmonton Oilers to start things off in the All-Canadian Division. 3 other games, including one going on right now. I did feel comfortable enough to lock in a Game 2 victory for the Colorado Avalanche at the second intermission. And if by chance the St. Louis Blues do come back to win, I guess I'll have to be re-recording. That seems like a miracle, even with Sammy Blais getting that second or the first goal for the St. Louis Blues late in the second period. Small gamble, one that I'm willing to take because the Colorado Avalanche have been as advertised. Elsewhere, the Carolina Hurricanes go up 2-0 on the Nashville Predators, and the Boston Bruins take a 2-1 series lead over the Washington Capitals after another overtime victory. But we begin in the North, and the North Division, where the Oilers were reintroduced to that unforgiving postseason wall. But I think the thing that was most shocking or discouraging or whatever when you take away your main takeaway from this game, the atmosphere or lack thereof, a little depressing, I cannot lie. There's no reason to expect anything different. Obviously, we knew there was not going to be fans in the stands. But after watching 4 nights of this intense playoff hockey with fans back in the seats, it did feel the Jets and Oilers a little lesser than when compared to everything else that we've seen. It didn't help that it wasn't an overly high event or wide open game. But if we're being honest, it was probably mostly because of the lack of fans. And I don't want to fast forward to a potential Game 6 in Montreal, but even 2,500 spectators, it seems, would have made a difference. That's at least something, and it really does need something because it is hard to differentiate that game from all the other games, the 56 games we saw from all the Canadian teams that were played in empty buildings. To the game, though. And the series that seems as though the Jets are trying to win in the mud, or at least they're trying to create as much variance as possible by reducing, you know, the amount of events, I guess, that are in the game. It feels like the Jets have almost used the last 6 weeks just to prepare for the Oilers. We saw this transition from an exciting brand of hockey to an extremely low event brand of hockey, and it didn't look good on the Jets, who for 6 weeks just struggled and stumbled in the postseason, almost gave up the third seed that they probably thought they had sewed up with this meeting with the Oilers.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But I think they view this as the only way to even the playing field in the series because they just don't have the firepower. They do have great offensive players, but they don't have McDavid and Draisaitl. And if you can limit the looks as they did from McDavid and Draisaitl, maybe you stand to have a better chance. I guess that's the benefit of knowing who you're going to play, where you stand, your limitations and your strengths are. But we've seen other teams that have had knowledge of who they're going to play and don't really act on it. Maybe the Jets weren't willing to take that chance. So it worked tonight. The Jets weren't the better team. It didn't seem like, at least. But they managed to reduce the impact of McDavid and Draisaitl through committed team defense, a lot of discipline, a little bit of fortune. That's how you pull upsets in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and that's how the Winnipeg Jets got Game 1. On the other side of things, I'd like to see Dave Tippett take the opportunities to stack the deck a little bit more. I mean, I don't know if it's a direct correlation, but the amount of time McDavid and Draisaitl get to see together probably, you know, it certainly influences the success that the Oilers are going to have. And usually they see sometimes they're on the same line. But even if they're not playing together on the same line, they see a lot of time together through the power play. And the Oilers just didn't produce any power plays. So it seemed like they were waiting for those tries. They're waiting for the opportunity to throw these guys together. They did throw them out at the end of a couple end of period shifts to try and get things going, or try and influence the game that way late in the period and try and get something going. But it seems like they waited too long to try and get those guys together. It is an automatic, fully offensive zone shift where you're putting pressure on the opposition throughout if McDavid and Draisaitl win a faceoff in the offensive zone to start. So I think a few more opportunities with them together would have helped the Oilers out tremendously. They have the ability, they have the power to create a power play, certainly when they have last change. So I think they wish they did that a little bit more. Also manifesting itself in this series is a clear goaltending divide. I mean, Mike Smith was fine, but he gave up a terrible rebound that got the Jets back in the game. A game that could have slipped away pretty quickly after the Edmonton Oilers opened the scoring. I mean, those are the moments where a game can go one way or another really hard in one direction. And the fact that the Oilers tied things up almost immediately, I think that prevented the Oilers from building on that first goal that they got. And that was really the only breakthrough they had in the entire game. So it stymied the momentum when Mike Smith gave up that rebound. But as expected, Connor Hellebuyck was fantastic. He's going to be fantastic even when it's not his birthday. He's going to be fantastic in the series. And the Oilers have to do a better job getting quality looks on him if they're going to beat him, because he's going to outplay Mike Smith if given the chance to. I think Connor McDavid only had about one shot in the entire game. Draisaitl didn't have many good looks either. So, you know, they need to do more than that if they're going to make things difficult enough on Connor Hellebuyck, who's obviously a Vezina caliber goaltender. As two offensive dynamos were shut down, though, perhaps a few others emerged. Tucker Poolman opened the scoring for Winnipeg. Looked like Logan Stanley got the second goal, but it was actually tipped by Dominic Toninato, who is not a big-time offensive guy in himself. So it was interesting to see where the offense came from the Winnipeg Jets, but I guess it's more interesting where it didn't come from if you're the Edmonton Oilers. Okay, let's go to Boston and Washington. And I think the only justifiable outcome in this series is a Game 7. And a Game 7 that goes to overtime. These two teams could not be more evenly matched. We've seen three overtime periods already, two of which went Boston's way, the other going Washington's way. I mean, the margins are so slim here. If you had to choose which team maybe has been better, I think you would probably go Washington. And I feel like I'm a little less comfortable saying that now. But at least in these two games, in these last two games rather, Washington has for long stretches looked in complete control, where Boston looks like it doesn't have it. But in both instances, that control Washington managed to light fire to and give Boston that opportunity to get back in. The Boston Bruins had 0 5-on-5 shots in the third period while trailing, but they got their opportunity when Nick Dowd raked the face of Charlie McAvoy and Brad Marchand scored on the power play to send it to overtime. The big storyline coming in was the third netminder that was appearing in the series for Washington turned out to not be the charm for the Capitals, at least not to the extent they were looking for. The main goal, obviously, is to win the game. However, Ilya Samsonov, it's probably clearly the netminder Washington should want in net. I think he played extremely well. He certainly gives off more confidence than a Craig Anderson or a Vitek Vanacek would. That not necessarily hasn't been the case the entire year, but he definitely looked like the most equipped netminder in the series, or the one that Washington has at its disposal. But he did make a serious mistake. Sorry, I just got to plug in here. A serious mistake on the overtime winner, leaving a puck, having a miscommunication with Justin Schultz, and Craig Smith picked it up and beat him to the far post to wrap in the overtime winner. He proceeded to go with the Clark Kent celebration, which I hope he will never live down in the Boston Bruins room, but I don't think that will bother him if he's called Superman the rest of the way. I guess the drama that's come out of this game is Alex Ovechkin yelling at, it seemed like, Ilya Samsonov. Probably not the best look, regardless of who he was yelling at, but Samsonov certainly didn't deserve the heat that he was getting, at least it seemed, from Ovechkin, or the embarrassment in that moment. He did his job, and, there was a miscommunication, something, it all went wrong, but we were in the fifth period of the game, and Samsonov was one of the differences for Washington up until that point. Evgeny Kuznetsov, rather. He was also returning from the COVID list with Samsonov. Wasn't much of a factor, certainly not to the extent of Garnet Hathaway and Nick Dowd, who have combined for 50% of the Capitals scoring to this point. I figured those two peaked as the participants in that drop of the puck line brawl versus the New York Rangers, but they have been very, very good in this series. Obviously, they've done their job offensively and more, but they've been like a factor every time they're on the ice. And Garnet Hathaway himself has been a thorn in Brad Marchand's side. And if you can fight fire with fire or go rat for rat with Garnet Hathaway and Brad Marchand, I think it should help Washington, even if it wasn't necessarily the case in this game. Carolina, as I mentioned, winning 3-0 at home against Nashville. This one lost in the shuffle for me a little bit. I only have so many televisions. The numbers certainly support a Carolina win, but perhaps not a dominant win. Maybe not like game one. It was 1-0 until late when Sebastian Aho scored his second into an empty net. In the third game, the third goal came when the game was already over after that second went in, obviously, but after the second went into an empty net. But it seems UC Saros kept the Predators in it, but it also seemed like Alex Nedeljkovic did the same for Carolina. Seems he shook off whatever nerves he might have been feeling in the first game, recording a shutout in his second career postseason start. So that's kind of the story there. It looks like the Hurricanes are going to move on pretty quickly beyond Nashville. I hope I can dive into a game a little bit better than I have so far in this podcast. But again, all these are overlapping, and I feel like what's going on in Carolina, not that it's less important, it just seems like it's more academic compared to the other series for sure. But I think it'll bounce away, in which we can dive in a little deeper on that series at some point. Regrettably, the St. Louis Blues have scored a second goal, so this could be torched. But I will say that if this scoreline holds, which I expect it to, it's right now 3-2 Colorado over St. Louis. Colorado has started these playoffs so hot. 69 shots in its first four periods. They got out to obviously an easy win in game one, got out to a serious lead in this game two. So their start couldn't be better, really. If they, you know, cough up this game, then we're going to be singing a completely different tune after this podcast or when I re-record this podcast. But it doesn't look like St. Louis is on the same level. Yes, they're mounting a little bit of a comeback here, but the fastball that Colorado can throw at St. Louis, they just haven't been able to manage just yet. Again, it's getting more interesting than maybe it should be, but Colorado is sort of in that same vein right now as Carolina, where they're just doing their job as the number one seed. Before we wrap, we did a three stars, which is it's old Yahoo to do the three stars. We do tire pumps here at the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast, so I'm going to do a tire pump instead of three stars for the rest of these podcasts. And I think it's got to go to Alex Nedeljkovic. I mean, only his second career postseason start, 32 saves for the shutout. That's impressive. And he's got to be the guy, it seems. I mean, we've talked about the fact that Carolina has had two main issues: scoring as much as they should based on the shot and shot quality that they produce, and getting the saves they need to win hockey games at the highest level. I think Alex Nedeljkovic still has a lot to prove here in this postseason. And I still think we might see Peter Mrazek at some point. But right now, he's seizing this opportunity, and that is huge for the Carolina Hurricanes. We will leave it there. We have a big one on Thursday night. The Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens are the last out of the blocks, but they will be coming in hot. We're going to have Julian McKenzie on to talk about that. So it'll be back to the two-person show for Toronto and Montreal. And I don't want to say it's the main event, but it's certainly one that is that will pique the interest of this podcast and its listeners, I assume. So, you know, we'll leave it at that. Another strong night, maybe not the same as it's cooled down a little bit, but the playoffs have gotten off to a great start. And I think we kept that momentum, even if the McDavid show let down the North Division fans a little bit. Still, that might set up for just a better series, because I think there was some belief that the Oilers might cruise here, but these are the Oilers and they have to get through that postseason adversity still. So maybe that'll be a longer series. Maybe that portends great things as the North Division gets underway here in the 2021 Stanley Cup playoffs. But that's it for me. We'll leave it there. Toronto and Montreal tomorrow, and then we're full-fledged into all eight series in the first round of the playoffs. I can't wait. We'll talk to you then. We'll be right back.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.